All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is Next Fan Up. My name is Mark Sitko. I'm your host tonight. On Sunday, we are recapping Week 9 of the NFL. Next Fan Up is the podcast by the fans, for the fans. With me tonight, I have two other super fans. I'm the super fan for the Eagles, and I'm really pumped tonight because we have a chance to beat Dallas, and we won't take the lead in the NFC East, but I'm not too worried about the Giants. We would be in good position if we beat the Cowboys, and we would basically end their season. We'll get to that by the end of tonight, but I'm excited. I'm pumped. And here with me tonight, another person who's really pumped. I have Jimmy, the super fan for the Panthers, who beat Green Bay today. How are you doing, Jimmy?
What's up, Next Fan Up Nation? We are 8-0. Can you believe that?
That is awesome, man. I'm blown away. For you guys to be on top of them, they're at 6-2. You went into Green Bay and won that game. That's awesome, bro. Jacksonville, we have your super fan as well. How are you doing, Ryan?
We are not 8-0, so I'm doing okay. It was we'll get into the game, but this may surprise folks unless they don't even know what happened, but it certainly doesn't crack the top of the list for disappointing losses or disappointing ways to lose, but some things were good, and it's another Sunday.
We're going to get to this other game as well. How's your boy Gabbert? I'm just curious if you're excited that or sad today that your boy Gabbert proved to be a winner.
Gabbo!
look,
I actually, I don't know if many other people's, how they would go on this, but I'm totally rooting for him. He was thrown into an awful position, and he also was awful, but I basically, you know, he didn't do anything on purpose to try to lose any game, and I was rooting for him. Why not?
No, we'll get there eventually, man. And that was, I mean, I'm blown away. Who saw San Francisco winning today? Unreal. So let's start off, though. Let's go back in time to Thursday nights, those glorious Thursday night games. This one being another awesome matchup, Cleveland versus Cincinnati. Ryan, you watched this game. Obviously, it went the way we all expected. What do you think?
It did. A couple things. At the start of the year, just off the top of my head, the Thursday night games were actually pretty good, or we had like a good string of them, and it was odd because they're always terrible. And also, with this game, it actually was a game in the first half, and Dara, I don't know how far I can go with this, but Johnny Manziel didn't look awful, is what I will say, in the first half. And even throughout the entire game, he wasn't let's go old Blaine Gabbert era. You know, he wasn't that bad. He was okay. But all in all, the Bengals were obviously the better team. You know, and Andy Dalton just had an efficient game, and he's been killing it all season long, which is just odd to say. And you look at the rushing yards. You know, one guy didn't really completely take over the game, but Bernard and Hill combined for looks like 130 yards, and we know the Browns' running defense is really bad. But most of all, I would take away the Tyler Eifert game because he had three touchdowns and he has really stepped up this season. All in all, you know, the Bengals are obviously the better team, and the score, I would say the score indicates what we think about these teams for sure, but I don't want to say the score is misleading, but in case anybody didn't watch it, you know, this was a 14-10 game at halftime, and there were some weird plays as well to where the score could actually be 10-10 if not for like a penalty, or it could really be 14-14 if you look at it another way, if not for a drop pass by one of the Browns. So it was a close game, but the Bengals came out on top, and it kicked off the week with, I would say, the first half would show what was to come on Sunday because we had a lot of good games on Sunday. But really, now that you look at the score, it's all done. Bengals win, and that's all there is to it.
Totally. A game that will disappear. No one will remember in 10 years. Not the
mini
game to stand up, to be perfectly honest. Not the mini game.
Tyler Eifert will remember it. Everyone else, nothing.
Green Bay, Carolina, a game that actually may be known for a long time, especially if Carolina goes on and wins the Super Bowl. This will be a game people point back at as a game where, you know, when you guys had a big test, you came in and proved you were clearly up for it. So, what did you think, Jimmy? What did you think of your kicking ass today?
Real quick before we move on to the Green Bay Carolina game, I was listening to Football Today the other day, and Matt Williamson suggested that Tyler Eifert is the second best tight end in football. Do you guys agree with that?
Second to Gronk, I would assume, right? That's what you're saying.
Yeah, second to Gronk.
Second best.
You would say this season, or like how they look this season. You could say I'm not ready to say he is the second best tight end in the league. I'd probably be okay with saying he's having the second best season for a tight end in the league. Something like that. I'm not ready yet. I need more time.
I agree. And when I heard that, I was like, I don't know. Yeah, I think Kyle Eifert's solid, but I was like, I don't know about that. And especially after today, one of the early plays in the Carolina-Green Bay game, Greg Olsen caught a one-handed pass and turned it out for about a 20-yard gain.
Mm.
And I have a hard time saying Greg Olsen's not the second-best tight end in the league. And granted that Jimmy Graham's being misused in Seattle, but the way Greg Olsen has been used in Carolina and has not missed a snap at all this season in comparison to any tight end, wide receiver, or running back, Greg Olsen has not missed a snap for Carolina. It's just, I don't know how you say Greg Olsen is not the second best tight end, but I mean, he's the most important weapon to Carolina, and Carolina goes on and win today against Green Bay, and I can't remember the last time Green Bay beat Carolina. I think it was 2008. And today there's a couple of important throws that Cam made throughout the game. Carolina, again, tried to blow the lead, and I think that's Carolina's biggest flaw yet, is they cannot close a game. They have a hard time stepping on the opponent's throat and just closing the game. They seem to let the opponent just live a little bit, and especially teams like Indianapolis last week, Philadelphia the week before, and Green Bay, who have potent offenses, they seem to let them just stay around and score those last couple points and just give you a heart attack. This is all around minus the score, this is a beatdown by Carolina that I was not expecting. I expected Green Bay to win this game. The defense showed up and put pressure on Rodgers. I think there was a total of 5 sacks for the game. Rodgers just had nowhere to go. He found Randall Cobb a couple times open. There was one play late in the game where James Jones got open. But Josh Norman did everything he could to keep him covered. James Jones made a great play. Carolina just made all the plays today. And talking to my Green Bay fans, I think James Starks is the best back for Green Bay right now. Eddie Lacy is terrible right now. He's not getting any games. He had one fumble today. James Starks just has that sense of urgency that Eddie Lacy does not. And I don't know if any of you guys caught the game today, but Eddie Lacy just looked like Trent Richardson 2.0, and James Starks just had that sense of urgency. I'm glad they played Eddie Lacy as much as they did, because I think if they played James Starks the entire game, it would have been a lot closer in the scoreboard.
Wow. No, I have Lacy in a couple fantasy leagues, and he definitely hurts me. I know he's doing horribly simply from that. Moving on to the next game, that is an incredible win. I do think you're right that Olsen is number two. Eifert's pushing him, and there's a few others, but it's incredible, that shelf from Gronk down. Then there's a small shelf of a few more, and then there's really a lot. There's not great tight end play, I feel like, in the league. There is only like 10 of them, and there's only like 7 that are up at the top, and then there's like some really, really, really potent ones at the very, very top. The Miami-Buffalo game, moving on to that. I was interested in this game just always to see McCoy, Shady, who's doing well. He had a great game today. 16 carries, 112 yards, one touchdown, a 48-yarder. Very impressive. The other player that caught my eye watching this game was Taylor. Taylor, 11 for 12, 181 with a touchdown. I mean, it might be numbers from 1960, but still, it's impressive. Like, that's not, I don't know. I think that's awesome that Ryan is able to understand what he needs to get out of that quarterback. He does a very small asking, and it does, very efficient returns. And then he relies on McCoy and that defense. Tannehill was 27 for 36, 309 yards. I mean, those are great numbers. No touchdowns, though. And he's just not able to keep up with that other team. And they really almost blew them out, 33-17. Miller, 12 for 44, 2 touchdowns. once again, that Buffalo defense was able to hold him down, but still, two touchdowns, they obviously stuck with it enough to get some effectiveness out of him. But holding a running game, you know, that low, yeah, there's nothing Miami can do. A couple weeks ago, it looked like Miami might be figuring it all out. Obviously, they're just not ready to contend quite yet in that division. But these are real teams. Buffalo has a very strong defense and a very great coach. And then you have, obviously, as we saw last week, New England is still too much of a match for them. Moving on, let's take a look here now. Let's jump to your game. Real quick,
I just want to say, who'd ever thought that Tyrod Taylor would be this guy? And also, just looking at the box score, it's very interesting. It's nice to have Tyrod Taylor. I mean, they have him instead of E.J. Manuel, and he makes them much more interesting. But also, you have 200-yard rushers in this game, McCoy and Williams, both over 100. That's just incredible. I just wanted to point those guys out real quick.
No, for sure, man. Just pounding the ball and, yeah, making it look easy in a way. Let's jump to your game, Jacksonville, New York Jets. I know you fell. I'm sorry, but I think the Jets obviously are a formidable foe. What did you think of the game?
You know, they obviously are a formidable foe. First takeaway, Chris Ivory is not right. I mean, if you just look at his numbers.
23 for 26. Woo.
Yeah.
Right there. Yeah. 23 for 26. Two touchdowns.
Yep. I like Ivory a lot, and for the past few weeks he hasn't looked the same. So for the Jets, Fitzpatrick also, I hadn't really seen a ton of him this year. He has 106 rating, so maybe I can't even say this, but he didn't even look 100. He was missing some passes. I don't know if that's common for him. Like he was just off on some throws, and still has 100 rating. But oh man. At being a Jaguars fan, like there were so many games this season, and with this division down as it is, it's kind of depressing to look at. But like the Colts game was probably the worst in my opinion. Watching this game, this was a more than admirable effort by the entire team, and I came out of this game honestly feeling good. But again, it's just another loss. So. In case I'm sure for many who didn't see this game because like Packers Panthers was on and other good games, but it's 21-16. Jaguars have the ball and they drive down. It's first and goal at the 10-yard line, 21-16. We have a fumble. Jets pick it up. Later on in the game, we stop them. Same, I believe it's still 21-16. I'd have to check on that. It is. It's still it's a one score game. They punted away, the Jets, and the Jaguars muff the punt. And so the Jets pick it up and then they score a touchdown. It's then 28-16 and the game's pretty much out of reach. Bortles like made a drive at the end and got a touchdown, but all in all it was turnovers. We were in position to win the game. Once, and we had a chance to get a drive to win the game another time, and then there's just a muff punt, and it's depressing. The good thing that I'll take away again from this is Allen Hurns and Allen Robinson are both awesome, and we the Jaguars at least have that going for them, and it makes me happy for the future. But this was just another loss, kind of because of costly turnovers and just not knowing how to win, and the Jets get the
win. Sorry, man. You guys will get there. Bortles putting up 381 is not bad. What were you going to say?
No.
Hey, Ryan, I got a question for you. I didn't see any of this game, but I'm looking at the box score, and you see Allen Hurns has 122 yards, Allen Robinson has 121 yards, and from a fantasy perspective, that looks great. But the one stat that jumps out to me is it looks like the Jets had 6 sacks. Did they have no protection for Bortles throughout the game?
Thank you I say thank you for bringing that up just in a game perspective. It hurts to hear that again. But another huge key to this game was a lot of those occurred on third down, and that is just awful to have happen. There's, you know, you're not throwing the ball out of bounds. You're not converting third downs. You're getting sacked. A ton of those. I'm not sure how many, but the protection – basically, the protection was decent, I feel like, on the other downs, and then just it gets to third down, and Bortles gets sacked, or he took too long and then took a sack. But, yeah, the Jets did have 6 sacks, and they all came, it seemed, at just the worst time if you're a Jaguars fan like I am.
Jimmy, you got to see another team get its butt handed to it. The Washington Redskins taking on New England. This was obviously worse than that. 27-10, New England just totally dismantling them, as I think we all expected. Did you take anything interesting out of this game?
You know, I live in Virginia, so the Redskins are the home team here where I live. And if it wasn't for Kirk Cousins and the whole RG3 issue, the Redskins would be a very enjoyable team to watch. But because of the whole issue, they're not. There's a couple plays where Kirk Cousins had Chris Thompson or their tight end. I think their carrier opened a couple times, and they just completely dropped the ball. And the first interception Kirk Cousins throws is right off Pierre Garçon's hands and goes right into New England's defending one of their corner's hands. Like, that wasn't Kirk's problem at all. But it's just your typical Redskins fiasco. It was such a joke to watch, and it was almost comical watching the Redskins play against New England. New England had a couple errors that New England never commits, but Washington had nothing to do to take advantage of it. It's just your typical crappy Redskins play, and it was comical to watch. Alfred Morris looks like he's a shell of his old self. I don't know if they're done with him. They're not even using him anymore. They did have their defense is making some plays, and it hasn't not just this game, but throughout the season. The defense for the Redskins are making plays. They just got no one on the other side of the ball to make plays for them. And in the long run, the Patriots made them a joke, and they won 27-10. Tom Brady did what they do. LeGarrette Blount had a good game. I saw Deion Lewis got hurt off the ACL injury. Haven't seen anything updated on Twitter. Brandon LaFell actually caught a couple balls for 100 passes, 100 yards. So he was effective. But it was your typical Redskins, the Redskins disaster, and New England did what they did. They went on the road. Took care of the ball and did what they do. But from what I watched, it was just another Redskins disaster game.
Mm-hmm. Some other bad football. I watched the Tennessee-New Orleans game. And, I mean, how does Rob Ryan not get fired? Well, these other coaches are getting fired. How is Rob Ryan not getting fired? Tennessee, you know, New Orleans at times was out ahead of this game. Breeze, as usual, had a great game. I mean, Breeze does everything he can. He did throw one interception, and I think that was actually the difference here. If you look, fascinating enough, if you look at Mariota's numbers against Breeze, we're looking both of them, 28 completions, both of them, 39 attempts. Mariota throws for a little less, for 371, where Breeze went for 387. But Mariota was 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. Breeze is only 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. I mean, that's basically the difference there. And the main thing you see there, it's not that Mariota is better than Breeze, it's that Mariota is throwing against Rob Ryan. I mean, the numbers Breeze could put up against Ryan's defenses would be incredible. It would be astronomical. But it's just so sad. I don't know how. I mean, New Orleans was still in position to kind of fight for a wild card, but when you can't beat Tennessee, you have no chance. Obviously, you know, Carolina's going to take that division. Atlanta's going to take a wild card probably. New Orleans, I think, is pretty much done. They're just kind of falling apart, and it's all about that defense or the total lack thereof. Ryan, you checked out the Oakland Pitt game. Oakland almost pulled this out, and obviously Roethlisberger left with his foot strain. What did you think? What did you think of the game?
Boy, well, I mean, again, this, to me, besides the results, which I were not happy with, this was probably the best NFL Sunday to me. It just seems like every game was close. Obviously, that piece of garbage by the Saints, you know, that wasn't pretty, but again, another close game, a lot of close games, so... Just another one here between the Raiders and Steelers. And if you look at the scoring drives, if you look at the fourth quarter, they each scored 14 points. So just a crazy game that went into overtime. But yeah, Roethlisberger's hurt, and the Steelers are you know, in a good position to be able to win that game. But a pretty tough one for the Raiders. They had a few turnovers, I think, that occurred in that fourth quarter. It's pretty amazing that they were able to make it happen still toward the end. You got Carr throwing 4 touchdowns in the game, but really, I think you have to look at the Pittsburgh side. Antonio Brown, I mean, he gets 284 receiving yards, I believe, and that some of that was from Landry Jones. And so the Raiders, pretty poor defensive performance here, because you got D'Angelo Williams also went for 170 on the ground, 6.3 yards a carry. So you can't stop Brown through the air with 17 catches, and you can't stop the I know he's played well, but the backup running back, because obviously Le'Veon Bell has gone too, D'Angelo Williams. So nice effort, you know, from the Raiders offense, and a very entertaining game. Now it's just interesting to see how these teams will play for the rest of the season, because you got Roethlisberger out for just a little bit of time, it looks like. It looks like it'll just be a few weeks, they're saying now. And obviously the Raiders lose a game, so that puts them back. So exciting wild card race, it seems like, for the AFC.
And incredible. I mean, Pitt is one of those teams, when you need to keep it going and your main players are down in all these injuries this year, Pitt is one of those teams that still figures out how to win, even when they lose a player for the game. You know, that's what a winning team does. So I give them all the kudos in the world. I mean, that's very impressive. Jimmy, you checked out that St. Louis-Minnesota game. What did you think there?
I thought it was a very
injured quarterbacks. Jeez.
Yeah, I thought it was a very evenly matched game. It's interesting to see Todd Gurley versus AP. You can see the future versus the past. And I think coming away with this game, you can see AP still has what it takes to win the game. It was really incredible to watch those two backs take care of the game. It was very evenly matched. Both defenses played as well as they did. Late in the game, Teddy Bridgewater took a late hit. I thought it was a little bit of a cheap shot. He was sliding down, looked like it was for the first down, took a slide, and a late hit came in and hit the defender, hit his head, and then Bridgewater's head hit the ground, kind of like a ping-pong paddle. And I was hoping, because I'm from Virginia, I went to ODU, I was hoping my boy Taylor Heinicke would come in. Instead, the boy wonder Sean Hill came in, and Minnesota was able to seal the deal in overtime, 21-18. But overall, I thought it was very evenly matched. I thought it was a very important game for Minnesota to win, especially with Green Bay losing. They didn't know at the time that Green Bay was going to lose. But now, all of a sudden, the NFC North is 6-2 between Minnesota and Green Bay.
Mm-hmm. Unreal. That is totally fascinating to see what that can go out. I thought Minnesota looked good in this game. I checked this game out quite a bit, and yeah, I agree with you. All day looked like all day. He maybe isn't as fast and quick as he used to be, but he looked completely sufficient and fine. St. Louis, I'm impressed with that D. I mean, it's impressive. And Foles, he didn't look bad. He had a couple long passes I liked. I'm always interested to see how he does. Atlanta, hey, San Francisco.
Want to chime in here, because I would like to, I don't know what I want to do here. Do I want to bash Foles? Do I want to bash Jeff Fisher? But first of all, if you're Nick Foles, how do you feel now going from Chip Kelly to Jeff Fisher? Because I don't know if you guys are aware, I heard this today and just looked it up now. Foles has thrown for less than 200 yards in now 7 straight games. These are very unimpressive numbers, and Fisher is just one of those guys who, and believe me, I love the running game, and I'm kind of an old man when it comes to football. I feel like I love running, and I miss it sometimes, but it's getting to be not good enough, and I don't know if it's all Foles or just the coach that he plays for is not really a passing game guy. But 7 games in a row, Nick Foles, come on. I don't even know right now, Mark, what situation you would rather have at quarterback. That's why I wanted to bring it up, because you got, you know, obviously the big trade, but Foles is not really looking that great for the Rams.
No, and I think I don't think Foles would be doing much better than Bradford. I'm not saying Bradford's doing well, but I do think he is an improvement over Foles. I think he has a higher ceiling, but Foles is doing what I expect of him, and I think that Fisher thought he could get away with that, and it's just not enough. Fisher's a horrible coach, though. And I don't understand how he's lasted so long. He has some kind
overrated.
Of power. There's certain coaches. Yeah, just way overrated. And I think he's just he's an old school football guy, and I'm sure he'd be great to sit and like do a podcast with where he told us all about football. But he just clearly doesn't have it as a coach. And maybe he's a defensive coordinator or something. And, you know, I think there's a lot of coaches like that where you get to be a head coach, but you really should just be a great coordinator. And maybe that's his problem. I don't know what it is, but I don't trust him to go very far. And then so Foles, I don't know. I wouldn't want Foles back. I don't blame Foles as much. I think Foles is giving them what he is. But he's going to need more weapons around him. And hopefully they build around that running game and he can be, you know, sufficient. I like Foles. I don't want to see him do poorly, but I definitely am not like, oh no, we don't have Foles. Like, yeah, he's not going to do anything great. You know, hopefully Bradford will come around, but maybe Bradford never will. But Foles was never going to be the answer, I don't think. I think that the problem is we need a prolific offense. Chip Kelly's system needs to put up a lot of points. It's not going to work with somebody who's just a game manager and keeps the thing going. As you see, I think we're doing that actually quite okay right now. Our defense is playing great, but we need to be putting up more points than we are. But talk about a teams that are not putting up any points. Atlanta, San Francisco, Gabbert wins his first game.
Gabbo.
What is going on, Tim? Tim, I wish you were here to answer for this. What is going on with the Falcons? I mean, you guys probably are still going to take you have a good chance of getting a wild card, but how do you lose to San Fran and Gabbert? I don't understand it. I know one way you lose is when you run your running back for 12 times for 12 yards. You averaged a yard a run, Freeman? I don't understand. That's crazy. Those are horrible, horrible stats. You were pointing out before we got on the podcast, Jimmy, that they actually, as a team, their total was 13 carries for 15 yards. I mean, it's just ridiculous. You should, in a game, have at least one carry of 15 yards. San Francisco, with the entire defense retiring, obviously still can stop the run. Gabbert was 15 for 25, 185 yards, two touchdowns and two interceptions. But apparently that's enough because he took down Ryan, who was 30 for 45, which is what you have to do when you have no running game, 300 yards, but only one touchdown. Truly crazy. Julio Jones had a great day, as he does. You know, he did fine. They obviously were trying to focus on the passing game, but just couldn't put up enough points. Yeah, I don't even know. I just am amazed. I know people lost money and got kicked out of pools based on this game for sure today.
I put in my Jaguars preview that Mike Mularkey was coaching head coach again and Blaine Gabbert's a starting quarterback and time to party like it's 2012 because that's the situation that the Jags were in a couple of years ago. Something that never looked good in Blaine's numbers, and I saw him a little bit today, and he looked fine. He did have 7.4 yards per pass, which is mm-hmm. not a Gabbert type number. So that was higher than usual. And the weirdest, everyone hopefully has to know, the weirdest part of the game was Gabbert got hit and the doctors from upstairs said he had to come out for a concussion, which he was not happy about because he said he felt fine. And Kaepernick had to come in and throw a pass. It was so awkward. It was great.
And Kaepernick threw an incompletion, right? Wasn't he 0 for 1?
He hit the guy in the hands, and it was a really weird attempt. He put his hands on the ball, and he saw he was going to get hit, I think, and then just, like, separated his hands from the ball so quick. It was weird.
Nice. Weird alligator play. Arms.
Jeez. Yeah.
This game just makes me giggle as a Pandas fan, and this is especially for Tim. Like, I'm sitting here, I'm looking at the box score, and Sean Drawn ran 16 times for 58 yards. Blaine Gabbert ran 8 times for 32 yards. Kendall Gaskins ran 7 times for 20 yards. I'm like, what the hell is Atlanta doing? This is a game Atlanta needs to dominate, and the fact that they lost is just is hilarious. I freaking love it standpoint, from the NFC South standpoint. This is Mike Smith all over again. This is the type of game Mike Smith loses. Dan Quinn needs to win this game, but the fact that they lost this game is just freaking great. And I'm a huge San Francisco fan. Blaine Gabbert, when Cam and Blaine Gabbert were coming out of the college, and I saw a couple mock drafts of Blaine Gabbert going number one, I hated it. I did not like him coming out of Mizzou. But now that he beats Atlanta in San Francisco, this is ice cream. This is great. I love it. This is absolutely outstanding.
I wonder if part of it, right, is the – Oh, go ahead, Ryan.
I know we didn't probably didn't want to spend, you know, 20 minutes on the Gabbert game, but I forgot we completely buried the lead when I was watching this game. Dan Quinn, oh my goodness, one of the worst decisions in I don't even know how okay, I'm trying to find out how much time they had left, but the game is 17-13. I think there's about 3 minutes left. I wish I could find exactly how much time is left, but 17-13. And I think the Falcons are on the 2 yard line or have 2 yards to go for a first down, something in that situation. And he kicks a field goal. He kicks the field goal and never gets the ball back. And I hated that decision because, if you go for it, if fourth and goal at the San Francisco one, this says, if you go for that and don't get it, you're in the same position anyway because you're hoping your defense gives you the ball back, and it's going to be easier for the defense to give you the ball back if the other team starts at the 1 yard line.
I say it all the time. Quinn needs to play more Madden. I know it's crazy. When I see sometimes when these coaches make decisions, it's like, look, coach, I know you've played like, I don't know, 100 games. That's cute and all. But I play 500 games a year, and I've run this simulation multiple times, and you should go for it right there. That's the way to do it. You want to win games. You don't stay in games when there's only 4 minutes left. You win a game, you know? I totally agree. I wonder if some of that was getting in his head of, you know, him playing from being a Seattle guy. And, like, maybe San Fran had more of more of an up on that team because they know how to beat a Seattle team. Not that they know how to do it, but if, like, they have to play Seattle, they're going to be in that game. If they're going to play Atlanta trying to beat Seattle, they're going to beat them, apparently. Crazy. Another crazy game to me was the New York Giants, not, I guess, as crazy, New York Giants-Tampa Bay game. I was impressed, as always, with Eli. He was able to handle it. But I think there's something wrong with the Giants' defense that they're letting teams like Tampa Bay stay in the game. At the end, the score looks wider than it was. This game was much closer than that. And Eli's going back to his old self and throwing interceptions. He had several of them in this game. But the fact that Tampa Bay was competing in this game, I think, was a problem. I don't know if you guys got to see this and have any thoughts on the Giants-Tampa Bay game. Anybody get a chance to check this game out? Cricket.
Only a little bit. But the Bucs were totally in this game. And Winston had that drive and he flew into the end zone for the touchdown, which was cool to see, but then they didn't get the 2-point conversion. And it was, this is really a, what was it? It was a 5-point game. And then I think the Giants got a field goal. So this 32-18 score is very misleading because it was one of those crazy lateral plays from the Bucks that got returned for a touchdown at the end of the game by the Giants. So that's why the score looks so lopsided. Other than that, it was certainly a competitive game. You got Mike Evans, 152 yards. Beckham did go over 100 in that game, so you had two kind of top young receivers going at it in the game. But the Bucs were totally in this game. That's my takeaway from the whole thing is certainly wasn't a beatdown by the Giants. The Bucs kind of hung around, and at the end, you know, kind of, it's another New York Florida game, and the Florida teams just didn't know how to win. That's what it came down.
And then JPP, I mean, he's back now, and he had a pretty good game. He got a couple hits on Winston. He was really heating up at the end. But what I found interesting is he wasn't using his left hand. The announcers were commenting on it, and then once you hear that, you start, like, paying attention. And they would close in on him, and he, like, he had something wrong with his, you know, when you have to reattach their chin strap or something like that. He had to do something on his mask. And he reached up with his left hand, and he was very clumsy trying to fix it. And it was clear, his right hand is hurting him so much or is so dysfunctional that he's not even using it to try to do basic things on his face mask. And the announcers were commenting and thinking that he was injured in his hand, that it actually was hurting him to try to use it to play football. But he was still getting penetration. I know it's Tampa Bay's line. I don't know how strong that line is. I don't think it's very strong. But because I have Doug Martin on some of my fantasy teams and he does not run well. But regardless, interesting game. I'm impressed the Giants pulled it out. It keeps them in first place in our division. We're coming for you guys. But we'll see how that goes. Then the other final game we have to talk about here is Denver-Indianapolis. Indy pulls this out. Yeah. Any thoughts you guys have? We were both watching this, me and Jimmy, as this game was coming on. Jimmy, what are your thoughts? How do you want to start this conversation?
I feel so terrible for Peyton Manning for losing another game in Indianapolis. It's just, I cannot believe.
Oh, poor guy. I'm sorry. I'm a Peyton fan.
And loses the game at Indy. And it's just like, come on, man. You go to Indy and you lose again. And then I just caught the second, maybe the last quarter and a half of the game. I saw that Indy was up 17-0, so I didn't bother tuning in. But then I saw Denver came back in, caught the last couple minutes of the game, and Denver's tied 24-24, and then Indy has the ball as they're driving down the field, and the last plays I see is a tackle's made, and then Von Miller and Dwayne Allen get in their face, in each other's faces, and out of nowhere, Aqib Talib does like a Captain Insano move and pokes his eye out, personal conduct penalty comes up, and creates an automatic first down to end the game. And I'm like, that's typical Aqib Talib being a little punk. But that should not be coming from Denver. Denver needs to be more disciplined than that. But I cannot believe that Denver again goes to Indy to loses, and Andrew Luck looking like Andrew Luck's playing poor. Frank Gordon looked like he had a decent game. I'm looking at the new acquisition of Vernon Davis. He had one target on the game, no yards, no catches. It's just, I cannot believe Peyton goes to Indy and loses again, and Indy still finds a way to stay alive and look prevalent in this league. They're 4-5, 2-3 at home, and just Indy's going to win this division. But this should have been a game that Denver goes in and wins easily. But again, Peyton just doesn't win at Indianapolis for some reason.
Ryan, what do you think? You feel bad for Peyton? Oh, poor Peyton.
Oh, poor Peyton Manning. His history was delayed is the headline on this recap. And the NFL set people were talking about this before the season started, that they set this up nicely to where Manning will probably break the record when he plays the Colts. And it didn't happen. And just poor Manning. This was this show is called Next Fan Up, and I'll let my fandom show. This is just a disaster for me watching this game. You got the Colts, who I don't want to win, and you got Peyton Manning going for a history and trying to stay undefeated. Like, this was a no-win situation for me personally, which everyone is concerned about, I'm sure. I didn't like that the Titans won today. That was awful. I hate them the most. This game right here is just one of those where I can't watch this matchup and hope for anything to happen, because you just have to watch and let whatever happens happen. It was a no-win situation for myself watching. But all in all, you know, Pac Manning doesn't break a record today, then I guess that's a good day. And for Jimmy, your team remains undefeated, but another undefeated goes away. So, really, it was a great thing for you. Maybe you'll be the last one standing. Eh?
I don't know, Ryan. You pick on Peyton so much, but every quarterback can't be Gabbert or Blake Bortles. You know what I mean? Like, there's just – you know, why kick him when he's so far down, sir? I think we should wrap off there. The only games left just tomorrow is Chicago-San Diego. Talk about two teams I don't think many people care about. San Diego maybe has a chance to get some wealth, maybe. Chicago's done. We'll see what happens there. I'm sorry, Tom. I know it's been rough on Tom. And as long as I've known Tom, it's been a rough time. It's going to get better, Tom. Things will get better in Chicago, I promise you. Philly-Dallas is about to happen in 15 minutes. I'm really excited to go see how this goes. The big talk, really, I just want to talk about the Philly-Dallas. I mean, I know we can't make too many predictions. I'm hoping we will win. Our left tackle isn't going to play, which really scares me because we injured Hicks. And so Skip friggin' Bayless this week was all pitching this idea that we hurt Romo on an illegal play, which is not true. All that Hicks ran around and caused a fumble, strip sack, and then because now Romo can go for the fumble, what you do is land on the quarterback and make sure he can't get the ball. So Hicks just fell on him lightly, but that quarterback is built like a frail old little woman, and I'm not supposed to be sexist and pick on women, I just mean that women don't, you know, osteoporosis. They need more calcium like little Romo, and they get smashed and their little fragile bird bones break. There's nothing cheap about it. He just fell on him. It was a man falling on a smaller, little, more frail man. And it broke him. And that was nothing cheap about that. And now they have this criminal beast thing, Caliban, basically, that they've from the Tempest that they've released on the right edge. And he's going to come and hurt Bradford because our left tackle has been playing. And he's going to use that excuse because Leahy is our quarterback to come hurt Bradford. And I'm going to be very upset. I'm calling this. If that happens, I'm going to be so furious. But that's very likely. I could totally see them doing that because they're cheap criminals. So to talk about the cheap, bad, horrible criminals, what do you guys think of Hardy? Greg, the super fan for the Steelers, really wanted me to go after Brian tonight about how he feels rooting for a team with such a despicable, horrible human being on the team. What do you guys think? Any Hardy thoughts you guys want to share before we jump off here?
I have plenty of thoughts since Greg Hardy was a recent Panther. I was a big Greg Hardy fan coming out of Ole Miss, and he was one of our late-round picks in the Jimmy Clausen draft, I think 2010, fourth or fifth-round pick, and he turned out to be everything that we hoped he'd be. But, again, Greg Hardy turned out to be a nut job. Like, he looks like a nut job when you see him announce himself Greg Hardy out of Ole Miss or Greg Hardy out of Hogwarts, whatever the heck he's going to say. He's a nut job. And when Carolina decided to let him go, I was a little upset, like, man, we really could use him. But Carolina already had one fiasco with Ray Caruth, and Greg Hardy was close to being Ray Caruth 2.0. After I saw the pictures of the guns early on, about all the different guns he had in his apartment, and then recently the photos of his girlfriend coming out of all her bruises. I mean, that's insane. I don't know how he's still in the league, and Ray Rice is not out of the league either. It's something that needs to be done. He needs to be the at least suspended for more than just four games. I know he was suspended for 10 games and appealed down to four, but something needs to be done. These pictures should not be changing from what we thought originally, so maybe that's our issue, that what happened originally should be enough, and then once we finally see the pictures, that changes our total thought process. That should not be the fact, that we should be basing this based on what we know, that he damaged and hurt a woman. And now that we see the ending results, we're freaking out. We should have been freaking out when this happened. This was Ray Caruth 2.0 almost, and I'm glad Carolina decided to move on from him. I was a little hesitant when they did, and I think he's going to have his best years as a player in Carolina. But from everything that he's done, and now that we know what happened after the fact, I'm glad he's moved on and gone to Dallas and let Jerry Jones deal with that. But it was literally almost Ray Caruth 2.0 in Carolina.
No, for sure. And, yeah, I think this is the perfect argument, right? You guys see a player like that, say, you know what, we're not interested, get off our team, and now you are undefeated. Not to say that's like direct cause and effect, but it just shows that you didn't need that. Even though he's an amazing pass rusher and a beast on the field, you knew that you could get by and be a great team without him, and you proved you could be. Dallas, who's just desperate and picking up these all penitentiary guys, and this is what happens when you see him on the sideline where he's up in the face of a coach, totally unacceptable. And as you were pointing out, I think very, very true, something is wrong. I've seen people this week arguing the rhetoric that, well, oh, you're just mad now because you see the pictures. Well, what? That's the problem isn't that people are changing once they see the pictures. Exactly like you said, Jimmy, the problem is at the beginning, people are not responding enough when these things are happening. And the fact that it takes us to see a picture or a video in order for us to have the proper response is on us. That is not on the system or anything like that. We need to figure out, and the system, I guess I should say, should be responding more drastically from the beginning. We need to nip this in the bud. That man should be in jail. Not only should he not be in the NFL, he literally should be in jail. I don't care if she doesn't want to press charges. That's enough. Like, me seeing those photos, there's, like, clear thumbprints on her throat. It's crazy. Regardless, I hope we take him out tonight. We'll see how it goes. What are you going to say, Ryan?
To kind of add to this point and even put a little different perspective on it, because, you know, we're going to have Brian on here, and I'm just trying to put myself in his shoes, you know. He's I'm sure a lifelong Cowboys fan, right? And we all have teams that we root for. We love our teams. We put tons of money into them. We buy all the crap and everything, and we watch them every week. And you're rooting for your team. You root for your team no matter what. And that's why it makes it so, I wish I had a better word, but awkward. Like, if Greg Hardy makes a sack tonight, you know, is Brian supposed to sit there and go, well, that, you know, that sucks. My team has got a sack. You know, it's an awkward position. So I don't blame fans for rooting. Like, if I was a Cowboys fan, you know, I certainly wouldn't go overboard. And as an outsider, I'm never rooting for Greg Hardy. And he's a despicable person. But I feel like the fans shouldn't be put in this position. And when in doubt with something like this, you know, I was kind of okay with the weird policy that came up last year where they just kind of took Peterson off the team and made these guys just disappear until they figured it out. And for the players, you know, just don't put yourself in this position. Don't be a criminal and you'll get to play. So for the fans, it's just a shame that they're put in. It's football, whatever. It's not that big a deal. I'm just thinking, you know. It's a weird position to be put in, and obviously this guy is just a monster. He's gross.
Totally. Yeah. The devil's advocate, just to play devil's advocate, I totally hear what you're saying, and I don't know the answer, right? But I think the other side of that is, like, maybe why the fans have to be in that position. You're totally right. They should not be put in that position, and that's an awkward place to be. But maybe the solution is for those fans to write enough letters that you let it be known that this is unacceptable. You're putting us in this position. I don't want to root for this guy, Jerry. Get rid of him. And maybe that's our role and it's all we can do. Because, I don't know what else to do, man. Because exactly, I'm really happy that Chip Kelly is bringing in good guys. I'm literally on the NFL channel watching about Connor Barwin revitalizing parks, you know, in Philly. And they're doing all this incredible, hospitable work all over. And you're just like, what is – then you flip over and Jerry Jones is calling Greg Hardy a leader after he goes on the field to confront a coach on a part of the team he's not even on. That would be like for an offensive player to attack a defensive coach and physically intimidate him on the field. Like, it's just crazy. And I'll leave it there. I'm going to go watch and root against this guy. I'm hoping something bad happens to Hardy tonight. We'll see how it goes. He's going to be going up against Lane Johnson, who's never played left tackle in a game before. So this will be fun. It's going to be really scary. But DeMarco Murray has something to prove, and maybe something will go well tonight. Thank you guys for the show. This was awesome. We are Next Fan Up. You can follow us at NFU Podcast on Twitter. If you go on Facebook and just type in Next Fan Up, you will find us. Thank you so much, Jimmy and Ryan. I really appreciate it, guys. And we are out.
Eagles won. Dallas sucks. Dallas sucks. Hardy, you almost got there in that winning touchdown, didn't you? Oh, you almost got to his arm, but you didn't. And then he threw the ball over 40 yards for a touchdown in overtime to win. Dallas sucks!